She works in Asia, so she would have worked in Asia.
Wow.
Yeah, she worked in.
Good evening. I feel like I know you all, and if I'm wrong, then I do now anyway. But my name is Barbara Smith, and I'm a student. I've been a student of Buddhism and Trungpa Rinpoche primarily since 1970. So I've been in a continuous flow with the studying and practicing the Dharma in both the Buddhist and Shambhala traditions since then. My family are all involved. My oldest son is an acharya in the Shambhala Buddhist tradition. My son-in-law is the Sakyang Mipam Rinpoche's, I don't know what his title is, but he's his main student, in it, essentially. So I have like a lot of Mark Whaley.
Oh, that's your other son?
No, it's my son-in-law.
Oh, your son-in-law. Yeah. I was thinking, whoa.
Yeah, my son-in-law and my son, and they live in Halifax, Nova Scotia, where the other headquarters of this tradition is located at this point. So throughout my long history of studying and practicing in the Buddhist and Shambhala traditions, I was asked, like, what would you like to speak about? And I don't know if it was communicated, the theme, or not, through Roland. I think he was going to put something.
There's something in the email.
Okay.
The title was in the email, but I don't remember what it was.
Okay, so I actually, he asked me, and I thought, well, you know, I kind of looked,
yes.
I looked like this, and then I thought, well, yeah, let's talk about negativity.
That's it.
Working with negativity.
Glad you remembered.
Yeah, so... I put my attention on it, and I'm only mentioning my history in this context because there are themes that are continuous throughout the beginning, middle, and advanced teachings, and whatever focus we have, whatever focus we maintain. So in the Buddhist tradition, we talk about, you know, three turnings of Buddhism, and in the, you know, the Shambhala tradition has stages and levels. But there is at least this one theme that tends to reoccur, and that would be negativity and working with negativity. And so how do we even relate to negativity or understand from the paradigm of a spiritual seeker, shall we say? What is negative? What does negativity mean? So I thought, well, let's just, you know, maybe think about it and break it down abstractly, just for the sake of the argument, so we can get on the same page with it. So if we talk about negativity, it's one of my original. If you think about, people ask you how you became a Buddhist or a spiritual practitioner, you think, oh, it was when this happened or that happened, and then, you know, at different times, it's different things happened. And sometimes I think, oh, it was in the math class in eighth grade when when Miss Smith started talking about negative numbers and the experience of negativity, and saying, if you have nothing, you have something, because something is nothing and nothing is something. It's like, what? Then she gave you 5 hours of homework to do on the weekend, you know. But there was still a quality of, well, just in an abstract sense, this has become something that modern people think about. You know, what is negativity? And if you have nothing, you have -20, right? Well, you know, there was a period of time 20 years ago, say, when that was popular. Some of you remember to talk about, well, if you have, you know, if you're $20, $20,000 in negative account, you know, you owe 20 grand, that's actually positive because it's the numbers that matter, you know. it's not whether it's negative or positive. And so I think that was what the Trungpa Rinpoche would referred to sometimes as negative negativity, if you remember that, if you ever heard that theme, where you're sort of taking a negative and putting a spin on it in a certain way, if you're putting a spin on something. So then in the, we actually can bend our minds around this, you know, in some way. And if you think about, if you ever have studied painting, which I have not actually myself, but it's also referred to in film, you know, the idea of negative space, you know, the positive and the negative, and the idea of the space around things and the space inside of things. So when we start to think about these things abstractly, it's also in the Buddhist paradigm of the notion of emptiness, right? The idea of shunyata is basically negative, right? It's like a negation, or the idea of the, in the Madhyamaka, not this, not that, not this, not that. So the idea of negative actually becomes a positive experience, because one is negating fixation from that perspective. So are you with me so far on that? What is negative? What does negative mean at all? So the sense of negativity is not actually negative in this paradigm. So if we think about the usual things we discuss in terms of Buddhist paradigms, the idea of suffering, obviously that's a negative experience. If we talk about egolessness, right, that's a negative, it's a not ego. And impermanence, that's obviously some things that don't fixate, right? So negativity is actually quite a good thing. negative is positive, but why is that? What is it that makes that workable, as we say? Is because what we're working with in the meditation paradigm is the basic thing we're working with is nowness, right? Mm-hmm. So we're working with a sense of nowness, and so when we don't have anything to hold on to, if we're fixating, then that's a bad experience, right? So if we think of negative as bad, then not fixating is something you don't want. But if you're letting go, the paradigm is letting go, then that's a positive. But in fact, the idea is not to cling to either, right? Not to cling to either negative or positive experiences. So if we have that, negative and positive as in balance, so to speak, from that perspective, right? It's not like there's a problem with negativity or positivity. It's actually understanding, if somebody says, if you go to sit down somewhere and you say, Is this seat available? And they say yes. That's positive. But if you say, "Is this seat taken?" and they say no, that's positive, right? So it's a way of actually framing things on some level. Is how do we frame things? So when we think about the quality of obstacle as negative, or negative karma, as we talk about, right? Then what we're talking about is in some way a debt, right? Our experience, we're in debt in some way. So what is that an obstacle to? What are obstacles on the path, actually? Well, that's why it's a good theme, because they tend to occur all the way through the path. So whether we're talking about, being on the path from the beginning, or being on the path at the very end, where we could use the example of the Buddha being, attacked by Maras, the idea of maras being obstacles. That's a negativity. So the sense of obstacle as in some way a negative that we can say, okay, well, we're talking about negative kleshas or emotions or things that actually hang us up in terms of working with negativity, not working with negative space. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Do you see what I'm saying? So how do we know when something is actually an obstacle as opposed to a blessing on the path, right? So if we say, I was trying to get to the center to meditate and my car got a flat tire, that would seem like a fairly obvious kind of obstacle, right? That would seem like fairly straightforward, that there was an obstruction on your path. But if you think about the... maybe you've heard... I use this a lot, so if you've heard me talk, you might have heard me use this, because I like it a lot, the Chinese proverb about the farmer who had a horse who ran off, right? Do you know this parable? The farmer had a horse who ran off, and so his neighbors came by and said, oh, that's too bad. And he said, well, we'll see. So the next day, the horse came back, you know, with other horses. So it's like, great. His friend came by and said, oh, that's great. And he said, well, we'll see. So his son went to, he had a son who went to, what do you call, break, I guess is the traditional word, these wild horses, and in the course of it broke his leg. And so his friends came by and said, well, that's really too bad, you know. He said, well, we'll see. And the next day the conscription officers came by and he had a broken leg, so they couldn't take him, you know, off. Yeah. And so his friends came by and said, well, that's great. And he said, well, we'll see. And so, it could go on like that. I don't know how far you move along in the meditation realm or the path of meditation, where you begin to actually see your experiences slightly differently, maybe than you saw them before, and the things that were originally to you maybe very obvious as being positive and negative experiences, right? Become slightly more flexible, shall we say, in terms of how they're interpreted by one's normal conceptual mind. So I'm not sure that there's an actual formula for this. So that's actually, I think, the why this is such an interesting topic, really, because maybe one can only kind of see it as a contemplation later when you look back and you see, I turned to meditation because of something that was so difficult, you know, in my life, which wound up being the actual most important thing that ever happened, because otherwise, you know, I wouldn't have, you know, people who have serious illnesses will often say that they wouldn't give their disease to anybody else, but they wouldn't, you know, give it up either. So, I'm kind of curious to hear what people have to say, more than just to say more about it myself.
Well, the first thing that came to my mind when you were talking about negativity was a recent experience that Bill and I had up at Shambhala Mountain Center, where instead of looking at the constellations of the stars, we were looking at the space between them.
Yeah, yeah.
And seeing that there was indeed sort of something in the darkness. And then the other thing for me that came to mind was... in our family, I'm the negative one, and my sister is the positive one, and it's always been thought that to have, be an optimist is better than to be a pessimist. Mm-hmm. So that always comes to mind. Whereas as I grow older and older, I don't think of myself at all as a pessimist. I think of myself as a realist and someone who is more able to take what comes and put, you know, work with it.
Yeah. Because, you know, two things occur to me when you say that. The first one, about the first thing is, because I wanted to mention that actually, but I'm glad you brought it up, is I think you have Elaine Ewan coming here. She'd probably do space awareness, if anybody's
she's
coming.
She
did something about arts, and yeah. It would be nice if she did space awareness.
All right, well, the notion of space awareness is, there's two different series of exercises, and the first one is a theater exercise where what you do is you switch your relationship to space so that space becomes the solid thing. So it's just like what you're saying, and I've had that experience myself at SMC. It's interesting to have it with somebody else, because with my daughter and I went out and looked, and just lay on the ground and looked up at the sky, and you know, I can't remember which one of us said, let's just imagine that the stars are the little pricks in the solidity, and all the black is solid, you know, and that the space, yeah, the space is solid, and the stars are just little, you know, lights coming through that, you know. So we lay there, and we both said, yeah, that is happening. And then we said, let's go back inside our little tent, you know, where there's space. So it's like working with that, that in an abstract kind of way. It's very interesting, and you could do that just yourselves, you know, just switch the sense of what's solid and what's spacious in your own experience. Very interesting thing to do. But then the second thing I also wanted to talk about is, you know, the notion of always, the effort to always put a positive spin on things is from our perspective, kind of, you know, for ordinary people to do that, it's what they do. But for us, that's kind of almost a definition of spiritual materialism, you know. So for you to be a realist is actually just the, you know, that's just the heroic, really. You know, it's just normal, because to not actually relate to try to always relate to things is a quasi-positive thing. We know from our own experience that just becomes kind of hellish or something, right? Fixated and... Mm-hmm. So the negativity in that case, you know, is just a... conceptual, right?
Yes, right. That's what I was pointing at, is that concept.
Right.
That actually seems pretty prevalent, not just in my family.
No, not at all, right? Or, what's the other thing? I mean, positivity is one thing, but the other one is ignorance, right?
Yes. Oh, I was going to say, the other thing that happened for me was I wanted very much to go to seminary. I looked at it, I applied, I wasn't accepted. And I was really distressed about that. That was, in my view, a negative experience. And then it turned out in 2 months my father was diagnosed with a terminal illness, and I began to see that as a positive thing. You know, it's all in what's happening now. And I realized, oh, I don't have to give up going to seminary because I wasn't accepted for seminary, so I can just do what I need to do.
Right.
When you were talking about the flat tire, that brought a thing to mind where earlier this year I was on the interstate at about 75 miles an hour in Nebraska, and I had a blowout.
Wow.
And that was interesting, I mean, in retrospect, as a Buddhist, because, you know, it could have been killed and all that, but I was really, really present and awake in that moment of getting the car over the side of the road and come to a stop. You know, and whereas, like, 30 seconds before that, I was, you know, just kind of, you know, lost in the interstate fog, you know.
Right.
You know, I was paying attention, but I wasn't, you know, in that kind of totally present, alive situation. So maybe this is an example of what you're saying about you always put a positive spin on it, but my thought at the time was, I mean, like, looking at it like several hours later, I was saying, that was very interesting as a kind of a Buddhist thing,
yeah,
to see that really awakeness of being forced on you. Yeah.
Well, that's the thing, is when you have an experience like that, I think that's sort of the idea, is it goes past positive or negative. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the idea of wakefulness, right? Uh-huh. Which is not, it doesn't, yeah, you can't, you can see positive and negative within that, but it isn't like you're skipping from one to the other, or choosing one or the other.
Like in that moment when I was bringing the car to a stop, I wasn't thinking at all about, is this a good thing or a bad thing?
Right.
I was thinking about, you know, can I make it to the side of the road? Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess I wonder, and I'm sort of in general, I'm sort of confused. I'm not sure why, but I was just thinking about this notion of having difficult things happen to you, and then as a result, something positive happens, like you turn to meditation and it enhances your life and that kind of thing. But to me, then, I wonder if there isn't an underlying assumption that if you hadn't gotten this serious illness, that you would never have.
Right.
So,
well, it could be
sure what I'm saying, but it's just sort of...
No, but you're saying the point is right, is because it's hard to talk about it in a way. Because the idea isn't that the negative turns into a positive. That's actually a kind of what Trungpa Rinpoche called negative negativity, where you're using a negative for another reason. But the point is that what's an intense experience, shall we say, becomes outside of being either something that you like or dislike. Mm. So the idea is to sort of drop the qualifications on the judgments on one's experience. You see what I'm saying? Mm. So it's very much winds up being a kind of personal thing, right? Where you're saying, well, you're not recommending people get a blowout in order to have a wakeful experience. Right? You see what I mean? It's kind of outside the realm of positive or negative. I mean, somebody else might have like, something very fantastic happened to them, right? Like somebody gives you, you know, you're begging on the street. Somebody smiles at you and gives you money, you know. And so you leave your conceptual fixation on people because of that. But then you wouldn't necessarily say, well, you have to have a positive experience for that to happen. It's more the sense of what happens to you becomes very much in a nowness, a quality of nowness. As opposed to what we tend to do, which is to constantly bias our experiences, bias ourselves towards what we conceive of as positive experiences. Because that's just purely our notions of what's positive.
And nowness, I think, of when you say that too, is direct experience.
Right.
There's no,
yeah.
It's without the
overlays. Yeah. Well, that seems to be the whole point, right?
Yeah. And the assumptions that people might make about you having had the experience, the way they perceive you if you tell them about this experience, may not have absolutely anything to do with the actual, your own experience of it, or, you know, it's just sort of what we do as, I guess I'm thinking in a larger sense, what we do as a society with the heroes and the, you know, battles that we fight and, you know, that kind of stuff. It's just, I think it may be a way to sort of distract yourself from actually having a sensation of wow, this could actually, I wonder what that was like, or boy, I can imagine. You know, and maybe that's a distraction too, but something where you're going towards it as opposed to going, no, she was brave. She was, you know, there's this thing of turning away from it and using terms that don't really describe anything, actually.
Right. Well, that's a good point, really. You know, it's kind of, what is it? It's kind of like the... I think what you're describing is the ideal of Japanese art. Mm-hmm. In fact, is to turn your mind towards something so that's so ordinary and simple that you have a sense of immediate appreciation for it that you can't describe. Like, why is that beautiful? Why is that rock? You know, why is that pebble that's off center so wow to you, you know? So yeah, I mean, culturally we have problems, let's say that, right? We have problems because everything has become so extreme that all you can do is make it more extreme all the time, you know? So you come and sit in here and why is this so nice, you know, in this room? It's not, there's nothing really extreme about it, right? But when you turn and look in every direction, there's a restfulness, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Where there isn't a sense of like that you're being polarized in a positive or negative. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You don't even necessarily have an opinion about it.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that seems to be why. Meditation is often said to be the only way for that reason, you know, that no matter how extreme it is, that what comes arises, and no matter how positive or negative it is, it's all given the same treatment, right? I mean, you could think anything, and it's just the same. Whether, you know, I'm going to save the world, I'm going to save the universe, I know how to do it, you know. As soon as I get up, I'm going to start my plan. It's all going to work. Like, or I'm going to blow it up. It's all given the same. Positive and negative. So that's, you know, so we were talking about externals earlier, experiences. So now, that's good. We're moving to the inner, the quality of inner positive and negative, which is closer, maybe, to what it really concerns us, because how much control do we really have about the externals on some level? Well, then we have to look at, well, how much control do we have in the internals? Well, that's the whole, I think the whole point of meditation in a way is that it accommodates everything. Anything can actually occur in meditation. And it's allowed, we allow it, which is, what is that? Is that a positive or a negative? Yeah, right?
It's just what is.
Yeah, yeah. Well, right? It's a way of going, you're going to meet your experiences on some level, right? In meditation, by allowing them. But also then there's the negative space, which is allowing them. And the going, you know, the being wakeful in the face of it is positive, shall we say. I mean, it's a way of talking, but nothing is excluded. That would be a negative, right? That would be the problematic version of negativity.
And so that's like basic goodness too, which is neither good nor bad.
Mm-hmm.
Way that's like us.
Yeah, right? Unconditional, the unconditional quality, right? Yeah. Go ahead, Eric.
Well, I was just thinking, I mean, what we're touching on here is accepting or engaging with everything does not mean being indifferent to it or being not engaged. You know, I mean, what was in my mind was like the criticism you hear about Buddhism from people who look in from the outside is to say, oh, well, everything is okay. We're just indifferent. You know, that's what it seems like to them. And I don't think that's actually the case. It's more like we see the stuff that we're talking about, that like the story about the guy with his son who broke his leg.
Yeah.
You can't jump to conclusions about things in the way that other people think. It's hard. I'm not seeing it very well. But.
No, you are, because it's hard to talk about, but that's the whole point. It's like the way Trungpa Rinpoche talked about it is like it's a fine line between frivolity and spontaneity. Mm-hmm. So the idea of frivolity is that that's not good. Mm-hmm. Being frivolous, kind of just jumping around. Well, spontaneous, on the other hand, is good. That's the whole idea, is to act at a free thought level. But what is the basis of that is that you're completely aware and not responding to things based on passion, aggression, uh-huh. right?
And we're touching on the difference between equanimity and indifference.
Yes.
Yes. Which is ignorance and equanimity, I guess that's right. Yeah. Like if you just sit back and I'm going to ignore all this stuff, that is not, you know.
Well, it's just numb. I mean, that's the whole point of ignorance, is numb. It's not actually even, it's not really, there isn't any such real thing as indifference. That's if you actually look closely at it, right? Uh-huh. There is no such thing as indifference. It's actually just moving, like you're going so fast, it seems like you're not moving.
Yeah.
Right, you're moving.
Or you're so numb that you.
Well, that's what becomes the numbness. Is that you're just like trying so hard not to commit. It's so active, in fact, to be numb.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and some of that I think is just trying to protect yourself.
Right. Totally. You know, yeah.
It's not just because it maybe feels just remarkably overwhelming on you.
Which becomes a habit as well.
Yes, certainly.
Yeah.
And we don't trust ourselves really to be able to handle nowness continuously.
Exactly.
Overwhelming, yeah.
Yeah, I think. I mean,
yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, oh, absolutely, right?
So we create all kinds of distractions.
No, yeah. Yeah, that because it's happening all the time, the nowness. That's what that's the whole point, right? Mm-hmm. So.
Except that we're perceiving it in many ways from our past. You know, we're framed, the lens that we see it with is
right.
Based on some sort of past something
right.
that we haven't, we're not aware of.
Well, I was just, that's so interesting just the way you put it, because I was just studying that today in the terms of the five skandhas. People study the five skandhas, which is, you know, how ego formulates exactly off of nowness, you know, because you don't want to have that. So you go, you know, and create this kind of familiarity instead of being in the shock, you know. And it was interesting to me because, as I say, I've been studying this so long and I never heard this before, I never contemplated it. Maybe I heard it 1,000 times, but I never actually heard it, you know, that this is something that you're expected to find out on your own. you're taught this, but that is only just a little piece of it. That's just a little thing, you know. You're actually expected to contemplate it and go, oh, I see, from the inside. You know, that's the only way it actually can work.
It's experiential.
Right.
Yeah.
like how many decades have I spent learning the skandhas and saying, oh, I get the logic, you know. Oh, I get that, but, you know, actually to break it down internally is the only way you really get it. Because what that implies is you have to go back to the bewilderment in your own experience.
It's like seeing it fresh.
Right.
Experiencing it fresh.
And then what happens, of course, is that, you know, you become unaddicted, right? Because that's the whole idea of ego, is that it becomes an addiction. It's just a habit. It becomes habitual. So that is what you call normal. But what happens is that when you unwind the addiction is that you become unaddicted, which means you don't have anything to hold on to.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so therefore, the you know, your perceptions are more in 3D or something like that.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, you certainly might be grasping for some ground at that point.
That, yeah, because you're used to doing that, but So it's always a good deal, in fact, you know. It's always like up to you. It's always like there's nobody really hanging you up. Never, really.
I prefer blaming others.
Yeah, I know, but who doesn't, right? I know, it's just that, you know, as you age, don't you find, Trudy, as you age, it becomes sort of like, oh God, am I pathetic, you know? Like the people I blame are so, you know, lame.
Well, what did happen was, because I was just about to have a birthday, is I realized, God, I've been doing the same thing for 69 years. And I just keep reframing it.
Yeah.
And I'm seeing it more clearly. You know, I'm still doing it.
Yeah. But it does get thinner, right?
It does.
Well, and that leads to maybe the last point on this that we have time to discuss, but I think is worth discussing, which is, well, what is it you can remember about these things, you know, apart from that, the main instructions, which you have to sit your, you know, sit, you know, sitting is the antidote, because like, you know, just like you say, you see in your own habitual mind, boy, I'm so bored with myself. It's crazy, you know. Mm-hmm. I could actually let this go, maybe. Sitting is part of it. But then also, what's the other thing? What is the other thing that comes back is, well, two things but that I'm thinking of. But the first one is that having a sense of humor. Right? Mm-hmm. It's helpful. And what do we mean by sense of humor in the Shambhala Buddhist paradigm? Is it's not like laughing at things or at yourself, but seeing these polarities, seeing the positive and the negative simultaneously. You know, you see them both. Mm-hmm. You see that they actually samsara and nirvana. They are self define each other. In within your actual sphere of experience. And the other thing is you know, we're talking about Trudy's family, so sometimes one's family is the easiest way to feel compassion, and sometimes the most difficult, right? Mm-hmm. Your own family. But there's always somebody in there that one feels a soft spot for, right? So it's like to actually make kind of an effort in that direction is worthwhile at the spiritual path quality. And not just for those standout characters, but the standout characters then become like a trigger so that you can expand the sense of compassion, right? You know?
And so what you're saying is that having compassion, sense of humor and compassion are the other two things? I'm kind of getting lost.
Yeah, well, yeah, the fixating on negative or positive experiences is what we're discussing.
Right.
So what is antidotal to that is not having more or less of them, right?
Right.
Which you see in meditation, that's actually not meaningful, right?
Right.
Because those things become just how you're defining things anyway, whether they're positive or negative, right? So it's not like manipulating your experience further is of any value. But then, so then outside of that, outside of your meditation practice, there's the quality of having a sense of humor, which is not being so, maybe so fixated on what other people are doing to you, right? I mean, that's how I always think of a sense of humor as being useful. It's like, how absurd that these, you know, insane people keep doing these crazy things. Like, oh yeah. It's probably going to improve if you keep telling yourself that. You know, it's kind of funny, actually. You know, there's that humor of seeing that. Okay, so, you know, let me just say it like this. Here's a sense of humor to me is, you know, just driving here shouldn't take an hour, but it took me an hour to get here because of the traffic, right? Which is very negative in my mind. Because, you know, having lived here off and on since 1971, it's, you know, should take 15 minutes max, right? 10 minutes, right? Okay, so that's a negative. But then on the other hand, the other side is because of all of that, this is here as well. So those things are actually, those things actually work together. That's what a sense of humor is. I wouldn't even have the negative experience of thinking there's too much traffic if I wasn't coming here, which is, you know, you see what I'm saying. That's like that's what a sense of humor is the fact that you're sensitive is
you
what
kind of both.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You can hold both.
And then the other thing is because the only reason any of it is worth expanding towards is to have compassion. Otherwise, you know, the whole thing becomes self-absorbing, you know, narcissistic, right? And as you advance on the spiritual path, that becomes important to not do, because you can, you know, because you become refined in your ability to slice things more thinly, shall we say. You can actually gravitate towards positive experience. It's called the God realm, right? It does happen. It is possible. But having compassion, it cuts that. That's the kind of maybe too logical, but you know, other people's suffering.
Yeah, being aware of that. Right. Suffering as being sort of a negative experience or a bad experience for somebody else, rather than sort of the way we sort of see it, whether it's positive or negative. Mm-hmm. And I think seeing that from somebody else's shoes is a really antidotal thing.
Yes.
And stepping back.
It's also getting, it gets really big in that, well, there's always going to be suffering. And that's always going to be our opportunity to care. I mean, they're dependent somehow on one another in a way.
Yeah. Well, it seems like almost defines what it means to be alive, as opposed to even having a path, right?
You mean without suffering, we really couldn't practice compassion?
That's like, right.
It's sort of the reason for compassion's existence.
And if you hadn't had suffering yourself, you wouldn't be able to appreciate what other people are going through. You know, so in that sense, it's essential.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sure.
Well, except the Buddha, you know, lived in a situation where he was like surrounded by cotton batting, you know, and butterflies and flowers and stuff like that. But there was some part of him that
knew there was more.
Yeah, there was, this couldn't be, you know,
Well, which is a very subtle form of suffering, which is his own suffering, right?
Yeah. And he had to, felt a longing to connect with everything.
Right.
So you're saying the God realm is a little bit stale or something? And that's...
Yeah, but somebody has to tell you that, and that's why he was so unique, I think, for us, that he figured that out for us in this, you know, in this time frame, that we have an example, somebody who didn't have to be told that.
Well, it's 5 minutes till nine. Thank you.
My pleasure.
And I'd like to just have a couple of minutes for a few announcements of things that are coming up in the future.
Should we turn this off?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.